Well, good afternoon. We made this title up for this. It's theory to practical application. Should have been trial and error, because that's kind of what this is. We've all have sat back and tried to understand this and tried to take multiple approaches to this, because there is no one approach. As you can see, I have a lot of cooperators, and this is just not in Arkansas. This is Clemson. This is LSU, Dow. We've all, even Georgia, we've all kind of taken little bitty segments out of this whole thing to see if we can come up with new ideas that might work in each one individual state, but also maybe at across states. And I can tell you, it's not an easy thing, but I think nematodes have lent well to precision agriculture. And today, what I'd like to talk about when you're talking about precision agriculture is the nematode. When I started this with Terry Kirkpatrick back in 2002, he had already been working with it about a year or so, and we really come from the direction of the nematode. You know, we did see populations in fields where they were huge populations, but we're not seeing damage. And then you get in these areas where the populations may not be as high, but you're seeing severe damage. So this is where we started developing those ideas, along with the help from other states. But you can tell this is root knot and very sporadic, but year in and year out, some of these areas do have problems with root knot nematode. We have found out some of these areas are just real deep sands, and nematodes are there, but may not be the overlying problem. So it's not one thing you can just assume is a nematode problem or any other problem. One thing has happened to us in Arkansas is we've gone from almost 1 million acres of cotton down to about 450,000 acres. And if it was a disease issue, going to a new crop like soybeans, that would pretty much end us until it come back around to cotton. Well, with nematodes, especially root knot, soybeans just kind of help us out even further, because they seem to be a little bit more susceptible. And this is a particular farmer that thought he didn't really have a nematode problem until he put it in soybeans. And most of these areas that you're seeing, these light yellow areas or these areas here, the plants are actually dead. And you went out the year before that and it didn't seem to be that bad of a problem. So soybeans are helping us keep this ongoing. We're learning more about the nematode in the worst case scenario that we make and, you know, pull back and apply back to cotton. But that's not the only issue. It's not just soybeans that we're rotating to. It's corn. Where growers once said, well, I didn't really have that bad of a problem. I consider it being light to moderate. Then they rotated into corn, went back into cotton next year, and this is what we have. Very severe problems after corn. Now, is that because corn is a moderately good host and it allows the nematode to reproduce in that one season? Or is it that we harvest the crop in June and July or early August, and then you have all that volunteer plants come up and they give a food source for that nematode through frost? So I think it's going to probably be a combination. And in that situation, we're not looking at row crops in. I mean, once those volunteer plants come up, it looks like you drilled the corn in. And so it really gives a ideal food source for them to go throughout the year, and plenty of eggs out there to overwinter or go over to the next year. So we're dealing with that. Corn's not a great crop to work with, though, with root knot or reniform, if you're trying to do ongoing research. With reniform, just like Charlie had mentioned earlier, it's a critter that's really starting to show its head more and more in the state. In most of the places where we see reniform nematode, it is more uniform in the field, but that is not always the case. We do see some soil textural changes impacting nematode populations when it's in regard to reniform, and especially in the sandier soils. We do see reniform, but it may not be as much as in the silt loam soil. And we can have anywhere close to 100, 120,000 reniform per pint of soil in this particular silt loam here. Whereas in the sandier soils, they drop back down to 15,000. So there is a population change there. So that's one area that we really need to look more into. If we look at the number of samples that are sent into Arkansas's nematology lab, out of all the samples that are sent in, about 88% of those are from cotton fields. And out of that 88%, 33% of them have some sort of root knot nematode in them. And then the reniform fluctuate anywhere from 4 to 12% of those samples. So we do have quite a bit of fields with root knot nematode in them as well as reniform. But again, this is our conventional way of sampling. This is going out and doing a random sample across that entire field. So we may be hitting or missing the nematode issue or the nematode problem in this case. So this is probably underestimating our problem in Arkansas. It's far more greater of a problem than what you see here. Concerns with conventional nematode management. This is one of the reasons that we got into precision agriculture, try to manage nematodes more effectively, but we still have some limitations even in that situation. When you're doing management of nematodes conventionally, you're basing that distribution or that sample record that comes back to you, or that nematode problem you're getting from your sample results, you're basing that off that minimum sample. You know, 150 acre field taking two samples. So I mean, you're really basing that off really not so good data. Thresholds. Most of the thresholds that we have in any state out there is based on data that was produced 20, 25 years ago in microplots. That is one nice thing about precision agriculture. It's let us take this small research type approach to a big real-time field and do research like you would in a small time or small plot situation. But these cultivars that were grown a long time ago are the ones that we're growing now reacting the same way. Are they as susceptible as they were back then, or do we have a little bit more tolerance nowadays? Limited consideration of environmental factors with thresholds and damage potentials. And I'll talk about this a little bit later. But part of this is tillage. A lot of our acres up in the northeast part of the state have gone more to a conventional tillage situation. And we have seen some major negative impacts when it comes to controlling nematodes, especially where we have interactions with black root rot. It is really hurting us severely. So we do have that to worry about. Again, no resistant cultivar to put into the mix of this to help out. You know, another key thing that brought us into the site-specific world is the chemical control. It's expensive. And as input costs continue to go up, we have to try to find ways to reduce those. And so this is one of the other big areas besides the nematode part of it that we've been working on in Arkansas, and we have gotten some economic data back that supports the use of precision agriculture. Nematode damage not uniform, but under a conventional situation, the only way you can apply it, unless you go out there and you historically know your field, all you can do is put it out, you know, all the way across the field. So, you know, that's costing us quite a bit of money, but it's also costing the environment if we're overusing a product that is probably not looked at very highly in EPA, you know, as a product they want to keep around for a while. So we hope that the precision ag will help us maintain the chemicals we have, because we don't have any new ones. So we beg to ask the question, can or has precision agriculture technology help manage nematodes in Arkansas? And the way I break this down regarding what we've been working on is in three areas: identification, recommendations, and then control. And I'll start with the identification. This is something that most of the guys that will give a presentation today agree that we have made great progress in at least making our sampling efforts more efficient. We're doing things more biological in nature by going to soil zones, because we know that soils impact nematodes because it is a biological creature. So that is one area that we have definitely made some progress on, and I think everybody will agree on that. You can utilize the technology to map out damage. You see these areas in the field that doesn't seem to respond to anything, or it kills the plants. You can easily map that for historical data. So that's out there. One thing we would love to do more of is incorporate this historical data into our recommendations. And the only way we can do that is become more in tune with the consultants and the growers that are out there trying to pull all this together. And that's one of the areas that has been the limiting factor, is being able to incorporate all this data into something that we can use. One example, in a perfect world, using the Varis, in this case where we have sandy areas in the lighter colors on the left with the Varis, and then the darker colors are clay. Root knot nematode, you can see, is pretty much only showing up where you have the lighter color soils in some regard. Even though you do have some in some soils, it's not as sandy. The problem is, in Arkansas, this is not the norm. We do have reniform in most of our fields with a root knot, so you do have this multiple species complex, and we don't typically have clays in our soil. This is borrowed from some stuff out of Georgia that I had a long, long time ago, but we don't have as much distinction in our soils in Arkansas. It's a silt loam to a sand. We don't really have as much clay except for one or two areas. So we can have this extreme differences in population. The main area that I think, the area that we're continuing ongoing research area and that really needs some more work is the recommendation area when we're talking about site-specific control. I think this area is by far one of the areas that we do need to dedicate more time to. Some of our initial work where we wanted to look at the nematode and how soils impacted the populations of nematodes, it kind of changed our mind on a few things. We thought that nematodes populations would go up linearly, straight up from one corner to the next when you're talking about increasing sands, but in all reality, populations don't. In a coarse sandier soil, we see population spike somewhere between 45 and 65% sand, and then we see those populations start to go down again. But that doesn't necessarily mean that damage potential goes down. And I'll kind of dab into that a little bit. This initial work took us more into looking at this relationship of sand and populations on yield. And if you look at this particular graph, what I'm trying to show here is basically this line represents a bale and a half per acre, and that's supposed to be an acre, not hectare, but this is a bale and a half per acre anywhere on this line. That's the yield potential. And if you look at this, the way you read this, take it a 45% sand and you go up, it's saying that at a 45% sand, this particular crop can yield a bale and a half while in the presence of quite a few nematodes. In this case, almost 2,000 nematodes per pint of soil. But as you increase that percent sand, to a 65% sand, that plant can't take on as many nematodes and still maintain that yield potential. And that is one thing that we've seen quite a bit of in dealing with root knot in these different sands. One reason is once you get the 65, 70, 75, 80% sands, there are a lot of other things that are causing some stress on this plant. And when that plant's under stress, the nematodes, it doesn't take as many to cause problems. And so we do need to work on some thresholds if we're going to keep going the route of the soil texture or soil management zones. We need to have an idea of how population recommendations or thresholds might change in these different populations. Impact of tillage. That's something that we really hadn't dealt a lot with until a couple of years ago. I got a call, and they were having a lot of problems with tillage. Hard pan, 6 to 8 inches down. And they had black root rot and root knot nematode, and it was killing plants taller than it would normally, or older plants than it would normally kill. And what we found out was that if you went out and rip part of this field, and we had the farmer rip every other 48 rows. So this is 48, and then this is 48. So every other 48 rows he ripped, and every other 48 rows he did not. And right beside each other, noted in the black lines here, we put out telon. 12 rows in the in the unripped and 12 rows in the ripped, and then we had a check on this side and a check on this side. And if you look at the galling in these different treatments, the untreated unripped had the highest, one of the highest galling ratings is, you know, dealing with nematodes. The unripped, the untreated ripped also had high galling. But when you looked at the telon, no matter which way you did, telon did its job. It reduced the amount of damage from the nematode by itself. But when you looked at yield, and 2008 was noted here in the blue, that when you look at this, that the untreated unripped was somewhere around 720 pounds. And then you get into the telon unripped was a little bit better because you're controlling the nematode problem. But you get to the telon where you ripped, it had the best or the highest level of yield, even though not statistically different from the unripped. But the untreated ripped also looked pretty good. And what we more and more we got into this, we found out that just from the tillage by itself, there was over 120 pound difference. So just that ripping helped him out because it allowed that root system to penetrate down further and get away from some of the problem. But where he did not treat or did not rip, it did not let the plant get away from the nematode, but it did also didn't let it get away from black root rot. In this case, in our soils, early in the season, when you plant early and it's cool and wet, black root rot is pretty bad. And this is something that we're trying to work on ongoing. This year, we had probably 60 to 80 plus inches of rain in the state. And so the nematode problem wasn't as bad, or the results in this test wasn't as significant this year, denoted in the red. But again, we did see the same trends that we did the previous year. So we're going to continue to work on this. And the reason I bring this up is this is something that we really need to pay attention to if we're wanting to pull together a real, true management recommendations for nematodes in general, because there you need to pay attention to all these other things in order to get the best money for your efforts in controlling this, but as well as other things. The last part of this is the control part of it. This is an area that we worked on quite a bit and have been working on quite a bit for a long time, trying to make sure that, well, if we had a site-specific application map, can we put it out and it be accurate for one, but can it be economical? And this is something that we have proven that works very well. And we've now moved it into a John Deere system that a lot of growers are pretty happy about because they didn't want to have to, you know, put in another type of a controller in a system that they were already using, a John Deere guidance system. So that also has helped move this technology on. In this particular case, we have tried this many, many years, since 2004 through today, we've been working on site-specific control and application. And what we found based on using an application map built off populations by itself, nothing else but just the populations, we found that in some cases that the VRT, or in this case site-specific application of the nematicide only where you need it, wasn't as good as a straight 3-gallon rate in a field of telon, even though it still made 75 pounds better than the untreated. We reduced the telon application by 36%. And again, this shows you that we still have room for improvement, and that's what we're trying to do. We have had times or years where the site-specific application actually out-yielded 3 gallons. This is not always the case, but in some years, we hope that the more efficiently or effectively we make this application, the better we'll get. In this case, 128 pounds above the untreated check. On average, we're somewhere around 35% savings on the telon in this case, which brings that back down to probably a little over a $20 acre treatment. So that may be a little bit more than that, but still that brings it more to a more reasonable cost for a good control. Similar yields, but one thing we have noted though, where you have severe nematode problems and it's spotty, it's the quickest return for your money to go into site-specific control if you have the right information to base your maps off of. You can say, then, is everything solved? And we say, not really. We still have a little ways to go, but we've made some good progress. Some of the future research needs. Again, we need to look at this about the populations and soil textures. How do they impact the damage potentials and thresholds? We need to work on that quite a bit. One thing in general is the multi-species situation, reniform and root knot. That's not something that's going to go away anytime soon. So we need to work on that. Try to integrate more historical information. Application efficiency. We're still using the same application technology as far as the tools itself, you know, the rippers, whatever it might be, the same way to put it out that we've been doing it. You know, again, develop recommendations for all available products alone and in combination. But I think the one area that I think we are limiting in more than anything is the education. Our growers, we can put all this information out there for our growers, but if we can't help them implement it, then we're not really getting anywhere. We really need to concentrate on trying to figure out ways to bring the producers and consultants together and work on the data management, the data collection. You know, we can tell them how to go out and use a Varis to map a field, but how to interpret it, you know, if they've never done it, then that's kind of hard. And if they get the populations back, again, we see this variation in populations. What does that mean? So we still have some work to do there, and I hope we can continue on that and educate everybody and try to keep this progression of using site-specific technology moving forward, because I think it is beneficial for nematode control in Arkansas, but I believe in quite a few other states as well. And with that, that's all I have.